Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is Friday, August the 12th, in the year 2011. We are on the fifth day of our retreat with the theme Awakening the Heart. Today we have a session of questions and answers, and the children have their chance to ask their question first. And then the teenagers and young adults will have their chance to ask the questions before we are down to have, we can ask our questions. We know that a good question can benefit many people. That is why we should ask the question of our heart. A question that has to do with our practice, our suffering, our happiness. And we may have a few questions already written down. And those of us who want to ask a question are invited to come up here and sit around Thầy and take a turn to sit on that chair. So everyone can see him or her. And before we ask a question, we listen to the bell and we breathe together in and out 3 times. So the children, if you have one question, 2 questions, 3 questions, come and sit close to Thầy. Sister Chen Kong said that children will have the right to ask 3 questions. And then the teenagers, young adults, will ask a few questions, and the rest of the time is for us, adults. Okay, please come up. Children, you do not have any question? I think you have so many questions. Be brave. Come and ask them. Sister Pine will repeat the question.
Dear Thai, dear community, our friend asked, how did did Thay feel when Thay left his country?
I left the country when the country was still in war. People were fighting, killing, dying. I left the country because I wanted to go out and to ask people to help end the war in my country. In a situation of war at that time, you cannot stay in your country and say, I want to stop the war. I want to stop the killing. I want both warring parties to come together and make peace. You did not have the right to say so. If you say things like that, they will put you into prison because they wanted to fight and to the end. So you have to go out of the country in order to try to call for help. So I was hoping that getting out of the country, I could speak out for the majority of my people who wanted peace, but he did not dare to say so. The word peace was forbidden. The word reconciliation is forbidden. Because people said that, well, the only way is to fight and destroy the enemy. See? They were the communist and the anti-communist fighting each other, using weapons imported from the outside. It's very silly, but that happened. And I intended to go out of the country only for 3 months, touring North America, Europe, and then go home. But after I have spoken out against the war, they did not allow me to go home to my country anymore. And I had to stay outside of my country 40 years. And you know, 40 years is a lot. And I feel sad because all my friends were in Vietnam, all my students, all the kind of work I like to do was in Vietnam. So I felt very sad. And things are very different in Europe, in America. It's not the same kind of trees, not same kind of fruit, not same kind of birds. So I had to learn how to adapt myself to that. So I learned how to play with French children, German children, American children. And I had to make friends with Protestant ministers, Catholic priests. I had to learn. And finally, it was okay. And during the time I spent in the West, I continue my practice as a monk, and I practice sitting meditation, walking meditation, and I share my practice with friends who come and help. First, we set up an office in Paris called the Vietnamese Buddhist Peace Delegation, and many young people came and worked as volunteers. They did not need a salary. We want to make known our aspiration for peace. And I had the chance to share my practice of meditation, breathing, walking, sitting. And finally, I got a lot of friends in the West, and I survived. When you do not have friends with you, it's difficult to survive. So although I could not go back to my home in Vietnam, I made friends in the West, I felt happiness is possible, so I continue on. And that is why in the last 40, 45 years I have been helping set up groups of practitioners of meditation. And now wherever I go, I have friends. So in the beginning it was a sadness, but now, well, there is joy, there is happiness. Thank you for asking the question. When I was about 9 years old, I happened to see the drawing of a Buddha on the cover of a Buddhist magazine. And the Buddha was sitting on the grass, very peaceful, very relaxed. And I was very impressed, because around me people were nervous. So the first time I had the desire to be like the Buddha. And in order to be a Buddha, you have to practice, to do something. So a few years later, I happened to see a monk. We were students. We were going up to a mountain for a picnic. We were organized as groups of five boys and girls. And I learned that up on the mountain of Nashan there was a monk practicing in order to become a Buddha. So I was very excited to go and find out how he practiced in order to become a Buddha, because I wanted to become a Buddha. Peaceful, happy, relaxed, and so on. But I did not have much luck, because when we came up to the top of the mountain, we found out that the monk was not there. Maybe someone had told him that 500 boys and girls are coming up. So he might have gone and hide himself in the wood to practice sitting alone. So I was very disappointed. And I did not know how to do water meditation, how to breathe in and out, because no one has taught me. So we were given instruction to bring bottles of boiled water and rice bowl and sesame seed in order to have the picnic on the mountain. Because we did not know how to climb relaxingly and happily like we do walking meditation here. That is why all of us try to climb as quickly as possible to come to the top. And halfway we were so thirsty and we drank up all the waters we brought. So But added to that, we found out that the hermit, the monk, was not there. So I was very disappointed. So the teachers gave the order that we sit down and bring our picnic, display our picnic. And while the other four boys were displaying the food, I ventured into the wood, hoping that I may meet the monk. And when I went into the wood, I suddenly hear a very, very beautiful sound, the sound of water dripping. And I allow myself to be guided by the sound, and finally I found a very beautiful, clear, natural well. You know, I was very thirsty. I was very thirsty. And when I saw the limpid water, so happy. And he knelt down and cupped the water and drank. So delicious. The water is so refreshing. And because Thay had read many fairy tales, so he believed that the monk had transformed himself into a well. So that I will have a private audience with him. And he was displaying himself as a well, fresh water. So when you are young, and since you read so many fairy tales, you believe things like that. That a monk has the magic power of transforming himself into a limpid well, so that you can drink the water and you can meet him in the form of a well. What happened is that after I had drunk the water, I felt completely satisfied. No more desire, including the desire to meet the monk. Very strange. And the water so delicious. I have never tasted any kind of water like that. It's much better than Coca-Cola. So after having drunk the water, I sit down and I lie down and I contemplate the branches of the trees. And because I was tired, I fell into a very deep sleep. I don't know how long did I sleep, but when I woke up, I did not know where I was. The sleep must have been very deep. It took me 1 minute to remember that I was on the top of a mountain, and the other four boys are waiting for me down there. So I had to leave the well with regret to join them. And in my mind, there was a line of poetry coming up. I have tasted the most delicious water in the world. Strange, when I joined the other four boys, I did not tell them what happened to me. Because it is a very, it sounds like a very sacred spiritual experience. And if I talk about that, I will lose some of the happiness. So I kept silent. I was very silent that day. And I believe that I was very lucky because the monk had transformed himself into a well so that I could have a private audience with him. And I think at that time, I believed that I was the luckiest person on earth. And later on, I hope that everyone will have a chance to meet them, hermit, the monk. Maybe not in the form of a well, but maybe a tree or a rock or a beautiful sunset. Because you are very lucky if you have a chance to meet your hermit, your monk. And many of us maybe may have a chance to meet him but did not recognize. So I always tell the young people that if it happened that they meet the monk, the hermit, they should write to me and announce the good news. Dear Thầy, they can write it on a postcard. Dear Thầy, yesterday I have met my hermit, my monk. And since that day, I wanted to become a monk. And at the age of 16, I obtained the permission of my father and my mother to go to a temple and be ordained as a novice monk. And it is exactly there that I learned how to breathe, how to sit, how to walk, in order to bring peace and happiness and compassion into myself. So remember, maybe you will meet your monk, your hermit tomorrow or after tomorrow. And if you do, please write Thầy a note and tell Thầy that you have met your hermit, the hermit of your life. Okay. That is the third question. I think grown-up people have to come to get ready.
Teenagers
and the young adult, please come. Listen to the bell and enjoy breathing.
You have accomplished the highest level of Buddhism, and if you haven't, do you think you will? And would you play soccer with the kids today? The question was, do you think you have accomplished the highest level of Buddhism? And if you haven't, do you think you will? And would you play soccer with the kids today?
Frankly, I do not have the wish to accomplish the highest level of Buddhism. Because after that, you don't have anything to do anymore. So at this level, I'm already very happy. So I'm relaxed, singly practicing. And practicing and help people to practice in order to suffer less and to be able to smile and to reconcile, that bring me a lot of happiness. I'm not very eager to attain the highest level of Buddhism. I've asked my young monastic students to play soccer with you today because they are my continuation. They are myself. My students, my disciples are also myself. And you are my student, and you are also my continuation. You are myself. So enjoy playing soccer. I think that is enough for children. Two questions. So the children will stand up and bow to the Sangha and go out and continue. Have a good day. Very good questions.
Do you believe that you have reached the state of enlightenment? And if not, do you believe that you will reach one at some point in your life?
Enlightenment is not something difficult. You can get it today. Enlightenment is always enlightenment about something. And one day you can get many enlightenment several times. If you practice mindfulness and concentration, you might get insight, enlightenment several times a day. You don't need to practice 10 years in order to begin to have enlightenment. Enlightenment is our daily business. When you breathe in, and if you become aware that you are alive, that is already enlightenment. That is already awakening. Because so many people who are alive, who are there, but they don't know that they are there alive. So one in-breath can help you to be enlightened on the fact that you are still alive on this earth, on this beautiful planet. So when you walk, if you are aware that you are making steps on this beautiful planet, it is a miracle to be alive and to be walking on earth. That is already enlightenment. So great enlightenment is made of small enlightenment like that. And enlightenment can happen even today several times if you practice mindfulness and concentration. And there is individual enlightenment. There is also collective enlightenment. There are those of us who are enlightened on the fact that our planet is in danger. And thanks to that enlightenment, we try to live in such a way that make a future possible for the planet. But there are those who are still not enlightened. They don't know what is going on. They don't know that our planet is in danger. And that is why we have to practice in such a way in order to help wake them up so that they can also experience enlightenment. And when they have enlightenment, they will change their style of living and they will be able to protect the planet. That's why we have to produce individual enlightenment. And we have to help create collective enlightenment in order for us to suffer less and to bring joy and hope to us and to other species. So enlightenment is our daily practice. And every moment of your daily life can be a moment of enlightenment if you are inhabited by the energy of mindfulness and concentration. And if you do like that, you are a good continuation of the Buddha.
My first question is, what was it like being on the Oprah Winfrey show? And then my comment was, really, thank you for sending my uncle, Brother Fat Ken, home to my mom and I. We haven't seen him in about 2 years now, so it's pretty cool. And we'll get to spend time with him, that's pretty cool.
A show is not more important than what is happening now. Exactly the same. Every minute of your life can be a beautiful moment. Every moment is equally important. And if you have enough mindfulness and concentration, you can enjoy every moment. You don't have to wait for a special moment. So the show is as wonderful as the non-show.
What is the goal of Buddhism?
The goal of Buddhism is to be happy right here and right now. And it is possible with the practice of mindfulness. You can bring your mind back to your body. Mindful breathing, mindful walking. And when your mind is there with your body, you realize that there are so many wonders of life that are available in the here and the now. And you can enjoy them. And you can be happy right here and right now. You do not have to long for something in the future. Buddhism means the path of awakening. And Buddha is someone who is already awake. And awakening is always awakening to something. You are awake to the fact that life is a wonder. And you don't need to run anymore to look for something elsewhere and in the future. It's just beautiful, just wonderful here and now. And enlightenment can, awakening can be obtained in just a few seconds when you breathe in and become come home to the here and the now that is full of wonders. The kingdom of God is there, the pure land of the Buddha is there, life is there, and you can be happy and compassionate right here and right now. So the goal of Buddhism does not mean that you have to wait for the future. That means you long for something that hasn't happened. Buddhism is the kind of practice that can help you to be right here, right now, in order to live your life right away and with peace and brotherhood and sisterhood. And that goal can be realized very quickly with the practice of mindfulness of breathing, walking, sitting, and so on.
I sometimes find myself wallowing in self-doubt and getting caught up in my own negative thoughts and insecurities, and that keeps me from fully enjoying myself. And I'm wondering if you have any advice to help me overcome my self-doubt and be present without worrying about my own shortcomings as much and thinking about how I wish I could be different. Very teenage question.
When something negative happened, when you feel low, we should not try to fight. We should accept the situation as it is. And we say that the situation can be different because there are good things in us that that can come to the foreground. It's like a television. There are many channels. If what is manifested on the screen you don't like, you can change the channel, because there is a channel of the Buddha, of love, of trust, of happiness, of joy, of brotherhood in you. And you don't have to fight the shadow of sadness, of anger. You have to smile to it. And you just turn on the other shadow. It's very easy. Don't fight. Don't try to fight. Just accept it. It is. Smile to it. And change the CD. Change the channel. That can be done easily. Because you have to believe that good things in you. Transmitted to you by parents, ancestors. And you have to learn how to make good use of the positive things that are in us. The pure land of the Buddha, the kingdom of God, brotherhood, sisterhood, joy, peace, forgiveness are all in us. And to practice means to give them a chance to manifest. Sadness, anger can vanish in 1 or 2 seconds if you know how to turn on the good things inside. And if you find yourself living with people who can do that around you, well, you do it easily.
Dear respected teacher, like everyone else, I have a deep volition to practice love and to be of service. But I'm also very forgetful, and I often find that I've lost the connection. And so I'm wondering, of the many practices that I have given to students, what are the best ways for me and for my ancestors to connect with that deep volition?
Can you repeat the question?
So the question was, when we have the deep volition to love, but sometimes we can be separated from that volition, and what are the best practices to help us reconnect with our desire to offer love? Is that right?
When you practice Sutta Sangha, you are reminded by members of your Sangha to come home to that. Like the practice of walking. If around us people are walking mindfully and enjoy every step, you are more divided by the desire to walk like them. And to walk like that is to come home to the best of ourselves. And we should learn to organize our practice in such a way that without making a lot of effort, we can still remember to practice. We need more skill than physical strength. Suppose we practice breathing in. You don't need to make physical effort in order to breathe in. You don't have to struggle with your in-breath. And you need a skillful way of breathing in. You breathe in such a way that your in-breath brings you joy and peace and enlightenment. And this is possible. Usually, Well, in our daily life, we breathe all the time. But many of us do not pay attention to our in-breath and out-breath. So we allowed ourselves to breathe normally, but we pay attention to our in-breath and our out-breath. And with mindfulness, you touch the inside, that being alive and being breathing in is a wonder. So you enjoy your in-breath. Your in-breath is very gentle, very natural. And it can bring peace and relaxation to your body and to your mind. So you need more skillfulness than physical strength. And sitting is also need also skillfulness. If you suffer, if you make too much effort, and then you get pain into your body very quickly. But if you enjoy sitting relaxingly, you can sit long, and every minute can bring you joy and peace. And if you are surrounded by good practitioners who enjoy walking, breathing, sitting, and then you are reminded by all these friends to go home always to your practice. And then practicing with the Sangha has the advantage that when we find ourselves with the Sangha practicing, well, we can profit from the collective energy of mindfulness created by the whole group. And with that collective energy of the group, you can very easily recognize your suffering, your sadness, your anger, your fear, and embrace them and transform them. It's very important to have a Sangha around you to help you maintain the practice and to help you strengthen your mindfulness and concentration. Therefore, every practitioner, when they go home to their city, should look around to recognize members of their future Sangha, invited them to come for a sitting, a walking, because a Sangha always help us to maintain our practice for a long time. And we don't need to wait for the next retreat. We can continue in our daily life. Enjoy the practice. If we have the talent to organize, and organize our daily life in such a way that make our that can help maintain our practice. When I first learned the Gatha, when I became a novice monk, my teacher gave me 50 verses to memorize, to practice mindfulness. And the first one is, waking up this morning, I smile. I know that 24 brand new hours are offered to me. I vow to live them deeply and learn to look at people around me with the eyes of compassion, the four line gathas. And you, when you breathe in, you read the first line. When you breathe out, you read the second line silently. And you have mindfulness concentration. And you enjoy, you cherish the gift that life gives you 24 hours every morning. So in order to do that, I stick a leaf, an autumn leaf, on the mosquito net. Because in Vietnam, we sleep in a mosquito net. And as soon as you open your eye, you see the leaf, it means you should breathe in and recite the gatha. So I allow myself to relax. I breathe in and I read the first line. I breathe out and read the second line. And you begin your life like that in a beautiful way, mindful way. And there is when you sit up and using your feet to find out your slippers, there is another gatha for you to recite and to breathe. So that is the way they organize the practice in a temple, so that you can maintain the practice in every moment of your daily life. I remember when the first time my teacher told me how to light a stick of incense. Usually when we light a stick of incense, that is to offer it to the Buddha. But my teacher said that, my child, when you hold the stick of incense, you have to hold by both hands, like this. You put your left hand on your right hand, and it means that you use your whole body and your whole mind in picking up a stick of incense. And you light it, this stick of incense mindfully, and that is already the practice. You have to do everything in your daily life with all your body, the whole of your body and all of your mind. And you are trained like that, so that you can maintain your practice throughout the day. There are many ways. Gatha that you memorize, a co-practitioner next to you, the Sangha around you, and the sound of the bell, everything help you to go back to the here and the now and practice mindfulness. So if you have a talent of an organizer, make use of that talent in order to help yourself and help your community to practice with skillfulness. And the practice should be pleasant. And the practice can bring relaxation, joy and happiness right away. And we don't have to wait for a long time to get this.
Dear Thay, thank you for sharing the Dharma with us. I suffer a lot, and I realize it's part of my practice. And I see that my suffering seems to come from two main things. One is that I have a chronic illness that causes me a lot of physical pain. The other is that I am an activist and I care very deeply for the world. And I feel sometimes a lot of despair about what's happening in the world around us in terms of violence, poverty, environmental destruction. And I wonder what advice you might have or what practices you might recommend for those of us who are living with physical pain or living with despair in our caring for the world.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, our friend practices with physical pain from a chronic illness, and she's also an activist and sometimes finds herself feeling despair when she sees all the suffering, the violence and destruction that happen in our world. And she's asking Thay for practices to address the living with physical pain and also with the pain of seeing many negative things in our world.
We have learned in this retreat that we can reduce physical pain with the practice of releasing the tension in the body. The pain may be still there, but it can be reduced if we can release the tension. The pain increases in function of the tension. So the practice of relaxation in the lying position, the practice of relaxation during the time you walk, because every step you make can help release the tension. Walk like a free person. Put things down. Don't carry. And you feel light. There is a burden that we always carry with us. And the technique is, the skillfulness is how to lay down the burden in order to be light. And if you sit and walk and lie down like that, it's very easy to release the tension and reduce the pain. And the Buddha said that we should not try to amplify our pain, exaggerate the situation. He used the image of someone who is hit by an arrow. And a few minutes later, a second arrow comes and strike exactly at the same spot. So after the second arrow comes, not only the pain is double, but it can be triple or 10 times more painful, intense. So when we have some pain, whether it is physical or mental, we have to recognize it as it is, and we should not exaggerate. Breathing in, I know this is only a minor physical pain. I can very well make friend and peace with it. I can still smile to it. And if you recognize it as it is and do not exaggerate, and then you can make peace with it, and you don't suffer much. But if you get angry, revolting against that, if you worry too much, if you imagine that you are going to die very quickly, and then the pain will be multiplied by 100 times, and that is the second arrow, we should not allow it to come. That's recommended by the Buddha. This is very important. Don't exaggerate. Don't amplify the pain. And we know that if we are not peaceful, if we do not have enough compassion in us, we cannot do much to help the world. As an activist, we want to do something to help the world to suffer less. But we ourselves is the center. we have to make peace, to reduce the suffering in us first, because we represent the world. And peace and love and happiness should always begin here. And the Buddha proposed so many ways of practice in order to help reduce the pain in the body, reduce the pain in the feeling and the emotion, and to reconcile with ourselves, because there are suffering inside, fear, anger. So when you take care of yourself, you are practically taking care of the world. Imagine a pine tree standing on the front yard. We ask the pine tree what it can do. What is the maximum the pine tree can do in order to make to help the world? And the answer is very clear. You should be a beautiful, healthy pine tree. You help the world by being your best. So that is applied for humans also. The basic thing we can do to help the world is to be healthy, to be solid, to be loving, to be gentle to ourselves. And when people look at us, they have confidence. And they say, she can do that, I can do that too. So anything you can do for you do it for the world. Don't think that you and the world are two separate things. When you breathe in mindfully and gently and feel the wonder of life, you are doing that for us, for the world. Remember. And practicing with that kind of insight, you will succeed in helping the world. And you don't have to wait until tomorrow. You can do it right today.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, for many years I've admired the way you treat children and have them be a part of the Sangha. I'm wondering if you would talk to us about what you think would be a good way to bring mindfulness practices to the inner cities and bring people awareness of breathing and other things that may help them live a better life.
To the inner city, to the urban environment.
I think we can do it in several ways to make the city life more pleasurable. Every time we go to Italy, we organize a peace walk in the city of Rome. And we obtained the permission of the mayor, to organize many people, practitioners, and friends join us in walking. We invited children to join us, like we do walk invitation here every morning. And they allowed us to walk through the city. There are policemen helping to organize so that we can walk slowly and happily and peacefully. There's no banner, and we do not say anything. We were completely silent. We are always completely silent. We was holding hand of children, and we enjoy every step. And the people on both sides, they look on us. This is something very new. The city seems to stop and enjoy. And it's very safe to walk very slowly and enjoy every step. The energy of mindfulness and joy are generated by walkers, and people in the city, they felt that also, they feel that also. We feel that every square feet of the boulevard can stop and enjoy the peaceful energy of the group. And we walk to the city hall, and then nearby we sit down and have a sitting meditation. What we notice is that there's a change in the way people feel about the work. I remember the first time when the police officers organized for us. A dozen of police officers was ahead of us with their car. They tried to arrange so that nothing. Violent would happen. We walk so slowly because we try to enjoy every step. And I heard a police officer talking to their colleague at the town hall. They are walking too slow, too slowly. I don't think that they arrive in less than 1 hour. And that was the first walk we organized in Rome. But last time, it was the fourth or the fifth time we walked in Rome, the situation was different. All the policemen walk in front of us. They enjoy walking. They enjoy every step. The direct automobilist and car drivers and others in a very gentle way, like friends. So the whole city like to stop and enjoy peace. I think it's good to organize a no car day in the city from time to time. A no car day. Yeah. You can talk to the mayor of your city and suggest that every month there is a no car day and people just enjoy walking in the city. And in India, addressing the National Assembly, I proposed that members of the Parliament of the Congress practice mindful breathing to begin a session of the Congress. And every time the discussion become very hot, and the tension arise, and then the chairperson can invite the bell, and everyone will stop and enjoy breathing in and out until the atmosphere become calm again. And Mr. Narayan, who was chairman, president of the National Assembly in India, he liked that. he became the president of India later on, and he invited us to come back and talk about how to bring more peace and mindfulness and compassion into the life of the Congress. And we organize young monks and nuns to go to schools in New Delhi and to teach the children how to enjoy breathing, enjoy walking. And we are now arranging so that what we learn here in the retreat, like releasing tension, enjoying breathing in and out, learning how to embrace a painful feeling, learning how to listen with compassion, learning how to use the kind of speech that can help restore communication. We are arranging so that that kind of practice can be brought back to school at every level. And we have organized groups of school teachers and train them so that they can bring this practice to their classroom. Because not only the young people suffer, but the teachers, school teachers, they suffer also because of the violence and the suffering of the children. So there are many ways to bring the practice into the life of the city. And we need all of us to help. If you are a journalist, if you are a school teacher, if you are a member of the Congress, if you are a filmmaker, you can always, if you are a parent, you can contribute your part in helping bring this kind of education, peace education, apply the ethics into school. And in a town hall, city hall, people can make use of this practice also. And it is perfectly possible to make this practice non-religious. We can secularize that kind of learning and practice, and everyone in society can make good use of it. In fact, we have to sit down together and discuss the strategy as how to bring this practice of peace into different areas of city life. Everyone should help.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, my question is in alignment with the name of the retreat, Awakening of the Heart. And I really feel that there's a shift in our society where people are starting to move from the intellect and the ego and more into the heart. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that. And also with what's happening within our environment and all the natural disasters, etc., if that's a reflection of what's happening within our own consciousness. Thank you.
Can you just say the question at the end one more time on the microphone?
So my original question is, what do you feel, is a shift in our consciousness within humanity from the head to the heart? And then if our environment is reflecting what's happening within our consciousness?
I think the title, the theme of the retreat is very interesting, Awakening the Heart. This, the expression heart include not only love, compassion, brotherhood, sisterhood, but also include awakening, include wisdom. In Buddhism, there is the expression bodhicitta. It means the heart of awakening. And sometimes we translate as the heart of love, because understanding and love, they are not two different things. They may be the same thing. We have learned in this retreat that if you don't understand, you cannot love. If you do not understand the other person, you cannot love him or her and make him or her happy. So understanding, it is the foundation of love. So understanding is also the added word for love. To understand means to love already. And the first thing you should understand is the suffering in that person. When you look at him or her, and if you can recognize the suffering inside of that person, the despair, the difficulties, the anxiety, the pain in him or her, and if you have understood that, you are not angry with him or her anymore. In fact, you are motivated by the desire to help. You don't want to punish anymore. You only want to help. And that is why understanding is the foundation of love. So, understanding is the heart. That is called the heart of understanding. And a father who does not understand the suffering and the difficulty of his son cannot love his son and make his son happy, even if he wants to love, even if he has the willingness to love and make his son happy. But if he does not know, understand his son, he cannot love him properly and make him happy. So understanding is crucial. Understanding, first of all, is to understand the difficulty, the suffering, the anguish. But in order to understand someone's suffering, you have to understand your own suffering first. Because your suffering, the suffering inside of you, reflect the suffering of the world. That is why we have to learn how to go home to us. not to be afraid of touching the suffering inside. If we know how to breathe and to walk mindfully, we have enough energy of mindfulness in order to not to be overwhelmed by the suffering. We have that energy of mindfulness and concentration to recognize and hold, embrace our suffering and begin to look deeply into it. And we begin to understand and to bring a relief to us, become light, lighter. And we can begin to suffer less. And when there is transformation and healing inside, when you have understood your own suffering, when you look at his suffering, her suffering, and you understand much more easily. And when you see, you are able to see and understand the suffering, the way you look at him or her change. You now have eyes of compassion to look. And when you look at people with the eyes of compassion, you don't suffer anymore. You don't have anger and blame anymore. And the other person, when they feel they beat that kind of look, when they feel compassion in your eyes, they suffer less right away. And that is why understanding here is not just on the level of the intellect. It is the result of the practice of looking deeply. Looking deeply into the nature of our suffering. And thanks to that, understanding arise. That's called the heart of understanding. Prajna paramita. Prajna paramita means with understanding, you can cross to the other shore, the shore of transformation and healing. And the other shore is also the shore of love, because understanding brings love. So when you cross to the other shore, that is the shore of love also. And that is why awakening the heart inside is to wake up understanding and love that are inherent already in us. That is the Buddha nature in us. So go home to us and touch the seat of understanding and compassion inside. And that is the purpose of our practice. And our world is desperately in need of these two elements. And these two elements you cannot buy in the marketplace, even if you have a lot of money. They don't sell understanding and compassion. Understanding and compassion you have to produce by your practice. And the Buddha tells us how to do so. And if we come to a practice retreat, that because you want to know how to do it, generating the energy of understanding and compassion so that you will suffer less, that you can help people to suffer less. I think it's time for us to enjoy walking with the children. They are waiting for us. Sister Tai Nghiêm, who is the bell master today, she is a Japanese nun. She is an excellent violinist. And she played the bell very well.